your life will take a lot of different directions and there's a lot of different paths, but enjoy it. And that's my biggest piece of advice to any entrepreneur is make sure you're enjoying every day.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Eric Hathaway's global business leadership resume includes work for Microsoft, T-Mobile, Credit Suisse, and Standard & Poor's. For the past 3 years, he's led the marketing strategy for Zoot Enterprises, a 250-employee financial services technology provider in Bozeman, Montana. Eric has helped completely rebrand the 27-year-old organization, which now leads its industry. He also won the American Business Awards 2018 Marketing Executive of the Year. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Eric Hathaway shares stories about team building, strategic positioning, and social media, and our universal need to balance work with the rest of our lives. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives. And from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Good morning, Eric Hathaway. How are things in Bozeman, Montana this morning?
Well, they're a little snowy and cold, which is relevant for this time of year, and I'm personally looking forward to it. I'm a big skier, so enjoying the white on the ground.
Eric is joining us from Peak Recording Studios today in Bozeman. So first off, tell me about Zoot Enterprises.
Zoot is an interesting company. They've been in Bozeman 27 years now. They were really the pioneer in decisioning, which is the background behind how a lot of financial institutions and today, in today's market, even retailers, are deciding whether you get an account. And our main focus in business is both credit cards and what are we called DDA, which is direct deposit accounts or checking accounts as you would know them. And Zoot runs an engine where if you have applied for a credit card or a bank account over the last 25 years, your information has probably come through Bozeman, Montana for a very subsecond of time to say yes or no. We don't make the decision. We actually provide an engine where our clients are able to configure it to make decisions based on a lot of their, what we call, attributes. And we work with major banks around the world, major retailers, and major payment aggregators.
And all that work you do globally is all originates from the headquarters in Bozeman, Montana?
That is correct. We've got our main headquarters is here. We've got about 250 people in Bozeman. We have about 285 people globally. So we have a European office, and then we have data centers that are spread across the globe.
Based on your background with the likes of Microsoft and T-Mobile and Credit Suisse, S&P, do you consider yourself, or in the industry, are you considered a hired gun?
That's an interesting question. I have been a hired gun in the past. I bounced around the world with some major financial institutions, and at the time, I was used as what they would call a hatchet man, which if they had a problem organization, they could send me in to be the guy that would either fire, hire, and or restructure. I would say that in my current role, the same concept has occurred. I think it was a company that had been doing things the same way for a long period of time. It needed change. It needed a refresh. And I was able to come in and basically do that over the last couple of years. I'm not quite sure anybody looked at it as a hired gun, but it has turned out that way, and it's been very successful.
Do you like doing that? I mean, coming in to a place that needs change and engineering that change?
I actually thrive on it. My personality is such. I've had, as you can tell from my background, it's been very broad. I've almost had two separate careers in both financial services and in the tech landscape. And I truly enjoy, I'm a big person, I'm 6'7", I'm a big personality, and I truly enjoy the ability to come in and change something. I try to keep up with modern times, and I know you'd mentioned social media, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. A lot of things have changed, and I love to come in and help businesses move to the next level. So, yeah, it's something that drives me.
In most of your experience, including the current with Zoot Enterprise, did they know they needed to change?
I'm not quite sure that anybody knew they needed to change. The time they brought me in, they had a marketing director that had been with the firm for a while, and he had moved up through the ranks. I don't think they knew that they needed to change at that point. They wanted to grow. I'm not quite sure they understood how marketing had changed over the years. And so the reason they brought me in, I'm not quite sure, was to make that change. But I think very quickly they understood how those changes have affected what we're doing and the performance of the company as a whole.
And how has it changed what you're doing?
Completely. We came in and we've been able to work with all of the internal groups and the company to completely rebrand. Branding is not just a marketing sort of scope. It has to do with the whole company. And so we've been able to work through a complete brand refresh, really as to how customers see us in a market that's changed rapidly over the last 5 to 7 years as what we call fintechs, which are financial technology companies, have come to the foray, to the front lines. And so, you know, the company has moved very fluidly. We work in a very different way. The way we're perceived is very different. And we really had to push forward that we are a tech company, and we are a new tech company, interestingly enough, because of the way that our competitors. And so it has changed in regards to how we're seen. We have then gone into the second phase of that in really looking at what's called the top of the funnel in marketing, where you look at bringing people to the table, bringing new clients, potential clients to the table. And we're actually moving into our second phase where we will really start a true product marketing. I can talk a little bit about account-based marketing if you want to dive into that. But so they have seen those changes. It has changed the way that we sell, the way that we communicate with our clients, and the way that we're finding new clients.
In that rebranding effort, does being in Bozeman, Montana help? Is it part of that strategy?
Being in Bozeman has its benefits and its drawbacks. I think, and most of the tech companies here would tell you this, we are, I think, number two in size, at least, in the state of Montana. We're one of the oldest. And I think the benefits are lifestyle, obviously. And attracting people that, if you have a culture of lifestyle, a culture of sort of togetherness, I think the mountains and this area breeds a certain type of personality. So there are benefits with that. I think some of the drawbacks are we are competing against global players. We are competing against firms out of Silicon Valley and New York and Europe. And so in some of those major centers, they have far more access to an employee base, a technology level of education and expertise. And so that is one of the difficult parts of Bozeman, is trying to attract or retain talent at a competitive level with some of these other areas in the world. So I think the answer is both, Arnie, and there's good and bad to both.
Eric, tell me about what Zoot looks like now and where it's heading for the future.
As I said, you know, Zoot's been doing what they've been doing for 27 years. And over the last probably 10, we've gotten more involved in the retail sector. And payment aggregators have been a new business for us over the last 4 or 5. Some of the areas that we're definitely looking at expanding. We're expanding not only U.S., but also globally. And really looking at filling out what we call the credit life cycle. And so we are expanding into the business of title. There's a lot of decisioning that goes on behind the scenes in the government sectors. And so what I mean by title is vehicle registration and title. We are going into the business of collections longer term. You mentioned some of those other technologies in regards to ML, AI, blockchain. We're looking at that landscape. And so we're in a high growth phase of our business. And the nice thing is we've got an extremely established business with an extremely established clientele, which gives us that ability to branch off into these newer markets. And so it's really about expansion at this point in time.
And why would a business hire Zoot or partner with Zoot? What do you provide to the business that they don't already have?
Typically, it's automation. So in many of the businesses that we're asked to come in and help with, They are doing a lot of these processes manually, and our system allows them, in any, just to give you an example, in a credit decision for someone to get a bank account or a credit card, there can be upwards of 300 and even 500 different pieces of data that are in that decision. And it's being pulled from credit bureaus. It's being pulled from alternative data sources. They're now, fraud is a very large segment that they're having to look at to keep fraudulent activity down, especially with all the data breaches. So the manual process is very difficult. And just to get, we just actually had a report that we put together this last year, a third-party analyst firm calculated that we can bring close to 500% return over 3 years with a time to pay back that investment of only 9 months. And so because they have been doing it manually for so many years, moving to an automated process, which is what Zoot provides in that decisioning side of the equation, it's their massive returns and it's massive efficiencies that we create for that business, which affects the bottom line.
What are the things you look at when you are assessing a company's marketing pros and cons, not just at Zoot Enterprises, but in your career?
I always go in and start with the basics. And the basics are, what is the actual market that exists for what someone does, whether it be a Microsoft or a T-Mobile? At the time I was with T-Mobile, for instance, you know, they were, that was prior to the merger with MetroPCS, and now I think they're doing one with Sprint, when they were bleeding customers. And so what was the true market? Who were the competitors in the market, and what was their place in the market? And that's with every business that you go in and look at. So that gives you the landscape and the understanding of what you need to do. Is it a growth? Is it deepening the customer base that you have? If you have a very large market share, it's very tough to grow. If you have small market share, sometimes it depends on where your business is. And then you have to look at the business itself. So you look outside first, then come inside and say, who are the people that you have? What are the resources that you have as far as financial, human capital, expertise? And then it's really forming a strategy. And I can't stress enough, so many companies that I've worked with at times, even the big ones, big and small, a lot of times they'll say that they have strategy, but then new leadership comes in and that strategy changes every 9 months or even 12 months. And the hard part with that is to try and compete on that short-term strategic direction. You have to be flexible, you have to change, but you need to set a 3-5 year strategy and where you want to be based on the market statistics and what you have available to be able to move and shift. So it's really then the third phase is setting a strategy, putting that in place, and then making sure that the organization as a whole is flexible enough, but stays on that strategic direction. And so with every company I've ever worked with or for, and where we've had to address major change, that's really the main process. And then obviously the forming that strategy and developing that, really dependent. It's very different in every company.
It's different in every company, but are there common mistakes or missteps that companies make in the marketing area when you walk in the door and you're starting assessing what's going on?
I think mistakes that they make at that period of time, sure. There's always, you know, the short-term ones as far as how people are managed, how they're motivated. I think there are, you know, there's always egos to be played with. When you walk into a business and try and develop a change management, whether it be in human capital or even strategic direction, that those are very difficult things for leadership and management that's been there prior to accept. And so there's always that sort of push and shove and why should we do this? It's going to take investment. You know, I'm not quite sure. I don't trust you. So I think that coming in the door, there can be mistakes that way. As I mentioned earlier, some of the longer term mistakes are not sticking true to that strategy. So when you spend the time and the effort, put that strategy together, a lot of times businesses, they're fighting fires. And so they say, oh, there's a fire over there. Let's run that direction. And I think it's so important. And it's one of the biggest mistakes I've seen companies make, that they don't stick to that long-term strategy. And again, I have to put the caveat in there that the businesses have to be flexible because markets change, and especially in the tech industry. So you have to be willing to change direction. But that's why when you set that strategy, you don't want it to be so tight that you can't change direction. You want to have strategic goals that you can be flexible with. So I think those are probably the two areas of mistakes that I see most often.
In my experience, often companies do not devote enough resources to marketing, or when there's any challenges or downturn, marketing is the first area to get cut. Is that what your experience has been?
So yes and no. I've in larger companies, I would argue that some of them have understood. I mean, if you look at a Microsoft or, you know, one of the big four in the telecom arena, and I mean big four being, you know, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T, those companies have learned that when markets are down, they tend to invest. They definitely focus on a more metric-driven investment. So what I mean by that is that, you know, very measurable statistics when times are down, and they're not just throwing money at the wall. But your point is absolutely key in regards to smaller businesses. And it's a tough game because when times are tough, revenues are down, margins are down. It's very hard for an owner of a private company especially to turn around and say, hey, I want to invest in new technology and new marketing, and especially marketing, because marketing has been one of the hardest things to really truly measure and attribute revenue to. But that's been a change in the last few years in regards to measuring marketing, and I think there's been more focus on it. But to your point, absolutely. I think that with small to mid-sized businesses, you see it all the time, that people pull back because of those budgets. And as I said, it's a tough game, because if you don't have the dollars, you don't want to, you know, throw dollars out there. But those are the times that you really want to, so that when the market pulls around, and it always does, that you can gain those new clients and get that competitive advantage.
You alluded to the fact that it's hard to measure the effect of marketing. So how do you gauge your success?
Since marketing became a major player in any business, it has always been difficult to measure the effects of marketing. You can measure the number of new customers you get, but then sales gets involved in that. So is it truly marketing, or is it really the sales guy? The sales department always says, well, it wasn't marketing, it was us. Marketing says, well, if you didn't have the client to meet with, then you wouldn't have sold, so it's us. One of the areas that I've spoken at a couple conferences on is called the micro moment. And what I mean by that is the likes of Amazon have come to the market and changed the way that we interact with any product, whether it be financial services, whether it be going to the grocery store. They have changed the way that we interact, and they have gained the trust of the customer without even a person in the middle. You know, you order something online and you get it in 2 days. If you don't like it, you return it without question asked, and your money's given back. That being the case, marketing has had to shift with that as well. And so marketing is a far more direct play with the customer in driving that customer engagement in. So there's a lot of software products out there now. There's a lot of financial technology firms. There's a lot of pure technology firms, even in the consumer space, that are addressing the measurement of marketing effect to the dollars. As businesses are having to spend more and more on marketing to compete, it's been required that we start to attribute those efforts to revenues. So the way that we go about it, at least at Zoot, and the way that I've tried to over the last probably 7 years of my career, is to, as the team develops its goals, that we make sure that all of those goals are metric-driven, meaning they're measurable. So they're not fluffy, you know, we're going to create a nice new website, right? It's about how effective is that website. So it's not about the creativity side of things. That always has to be there. But it's about how effective is that website? What kind of traffic is coming to it? Traffic statistics have actually even gone out the window now. We're at the next level of what does that traffic do when it hits the site? Does it engage with the material? Do they dive in deeper into the site? How many pages do they visit? What types of pages? So it's really about gathering information. And as our technology has increased, it would be scary for all of the listeners to this show and anybody to realize how much information exists about each one of you that you don't know about. And we have the ability nowadays to track that information. It's kind of scary, a little big brotherish, but that's where marketing is headed, is to really dive into those deep statistics to measure how effective each one of those dollars is being. Does that make sense?
Yes. And when you implement your tactics and plans, how long does it take to see the results?
So I might back up on that question a little bit. So it takes time to implement those plans. I would tell you that from a strategic to a brand refresh to implementing those, we are about halfway through, and we've been preparing for this Now, granted, we started from a very base level, but we're 2.5 years in, and we are halfway through. We are just starting to see the effects of what I called or mentioned earlier, which is the top of the funnel, which is really bringing customers to our assets. Those were developed and continue to be developed, but those were developed 12 months ago. And over the 12 months, we are just starting to really see, I mean, we've seen some of the effects over the last year, but you're setting the floor so that you have something to measure going forward. So we're expecting we can measure against that floor over the next year. So if you look at that, you're probably talking a rolling 2 years, Arnie. I do have to tell you that we're in the B2B space, which is business to business, where in B2C, which is business to consumer, it's a much different time frame. You can actually see those effects in weeks and months rather than years for a typical B2B. And we're an odd B2B in the fact that we have a 12 to 18 month sales cycle. So it takes about that long for us to get to the table, even for someone to say yes or no. In businesses that have shorter sales cycles, you can see those effects much quicker. And like I said, in the B2C, even in weeks and months.
I'm talking with Eric Hathaway, Vice President of Marketing for Zoot Enterprises out of Bozeman, Montana. So let me talk about social media. It changes all the time. It's a driving force behind marketing. How do you stay up with trends? And how do you know which social media channels fit in a B2B context?
It's a great question and very relevant. I have always been a team guy. And what I mean by that is developing teams. If you are a good leader, you're hiring people that are smarter than you. And I've always made that one of my mantras. I hope that every one of my team members is smarter than I, but also a diverse team. And whether that is race, whether it is male, female, but also in age and experience. And so as social media has developed, I've brought in a number of people on our team that are of that market and of that age. And we, you know, millennials get a bad rap. I disagree. I think millennials are just a new generation, and we have to understand and we have to use them. And so even in our market, so if you've ever heard of the term influencer marketing, influencer has actually kind of taken social to the next level. Companies are starting to realize that there are these younger individuals out there that are promoting products. And again, back to B2C, business to consumer, it's a huge marketing play in the social arena. Business to business now, or B2B, is moving that direction as well. And so we have taken that and used those individuals to say, what is attracting you to a solution? What is attracting you to a business? And so that's how we've kept up with it, is really grasping onto the market that's using it and saying, how would you use this? And so from a technology perspective and a market usage perspective, it's really about bringing those assets on board. As far as using that, we have actually spearheaded, at least in our arena, the influencer landscape with B2B. And we're trying things out and testing things. And I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. As marketing changes, as the competitive landscape changes, companies need to give some budget to being able to test new things. And Zoot has been fabulous about that because they've allowed us to say, hey, let's test this out. Let's see if influencer is effective in the B2B world. I think you might have heard, we even started our own podcast. We've branded it sort of individually as a separate asset. But looking at that, as podcasts come back to the surface. And so in the B2B world, is it working? We don't know. And so we're trying that out. So I think it's a combination, Arnie, of both finding the customer base that you're looking at in social media and some of that technology. But in addition, being able to test that out and fail fast. And I don't mean fail quickly, but fail fast. So if it's not working and those dollars aren't making sense, get out and do something different.
You bring up an interesting point. You work with some of the largest financial institutions on the planet, and some of them are risk, you know, adverse, and you want to test new things out. In particular, I'm thinking about blockchain technology. Lots of financial institutions are dabbling with that. How do you incorporate the technological changes or advancements or things that are being explored into a marketing strategy?
I think I just read an article this morning about blockchain. Blockchain is in every country. You can't get away from blockchain right now. You're hearing it in everything. And I think even now companies are starting to steer away from the term blockchain. And they want to use distributed ledger technology, so DLT, which is a term you'll hear that will reference blockchain in the future. So I think it's important, when I said earlier about testing, I think it's always great to be first to market, but you can spend a lot of money failing to be first to market as well. And you're right, we work in a very risk-averse landscape. And so as these companies, however, are starting to be challenged, the financial technology industry has really challenged the financial services sector over the last 3 to 4 years. So we're seeing a lot of these large financial institutions bring some of these fintechs now to the table, in whether it be a merger, whether it be an acquisition, whether it be a partnership. And especially with things like blockchain or a couple other terms, you know, AI or artificial intelligence or ML, which is machine learning. So we've got to keep front of mind with the technology, the terminology, and what's going on from a marketing perspective. But we also need to make sure that we're being realistic in the things that we test. So from a marketing perspective, we say, is blockchain, does it relate to what we're doing? Yes, in a way it does, because blockchain is a distributed ledger. It's a string of information that's very easily accessible. It's secure. And we may be able to use that in our business and help our clients. So blockchain is something we talk about. Machine learning or artificial intelligence, two very different things, by the way, and they get mixed up. Talk about that at a later point in time if you want. But we have to keep top of mind that machine learning and artificial intelligence is being talked about. However, it's still so far in the future because of some of the regulatory elements of the industry that we're in that it probably won't be something that will be a top of mind conversation in at least what we do. So I think it's important to keep that in mind as you look at marketing and that testing and driving forward and trying new things to make sure that it's relevant to the industry that you're in.
Let me switch gears a little bit. Is what you're doing now is what you started out to do in the beginning of your career?
Fascinatingly, yes. I got a degree in international business and a minor in computer science. I went off and worked around the globe. I think one of my early goals in life was to live on all 7 continents. I've only hit 4. Probably won't hit the other 3, interestingly enough. And I enjoyed technology. It has all looped around. The path was very different than what I would have expected. But the end result, I'm in a company that works in technology and needed change. And there's a marketing element to that. So yes, interestingly enough, the path, like I said, not even close to what I thought.
Did you start out in Montana? Were you in Montana previously to this tenure at Zoot?
I was. I was a Bozeman boy. I went to high school here and actually graduated from Bozeman High. And then my career went through the roof very quickly. I went out to Oregon. Or I went off to college first down in Santa Barbara, then ended up in Oregon and ended up overseas and spent 10 years bouncing around the world. Was able to come back at a period of time. I got to play semi-retirement, let's call it that. I always wanted to be a dad, and I've got 2 little girls, and was able to come back here for a couple of years and raise those 2 kids, and still doing that. But then went off to Seattle and Austin and started into the tech world. And so I've been in and out of the area, but it's been such a pleasure to be back in Bozeman and planning on staying.
On a previous show, we had John Connors, who spent 15 years at Microsoft as rising to being a chief financial officer, and he's doing private equity now, and he was originally from Miles City, and he talked about a Montana work ethic that wore well in Silicon Valley and in other places around the world. Do you see that also?
Absolutely. Somebody told me the other day, I don't remember who made this comment, but they said, the mountains raise good people. And you can always find intelligent people. You can always find driven people, but it's hard to find good people. And I know that's a very fluffy term, but what I mean by that is there's values, trust, there's a work ethic that they want to get things done and they want to do it the right way. And so a lot of times I will take that work ethic over education sometimes. And I would completely agree with him.
You've worked around the world. Is there a U.S. business style that has to be modified in the four other, the three other continents that you worked in?
Absolutely. When I first started working for Credit Suisse, I think I mentioned earlier in the show that I was used as a hatchet man. One of the reasons I was used as a hatchet man was because I was the big, ugly American, as they call it, and they could blame everything on me if it went badly, and they wouldn't get in trouble. There is a different work ethic in every place I've been. Switzerland, it was very structured, and there were a lot of rules, not only in how you interacted with people, interacted with your employees, and interacted with your bosses. In Asia, it was a completely different animal in regards to how you managed people and how you led people. They were looking to be told what to do, and it was a struggle sometimes to try to get them to understand that I wanted them to think, I wanted them to do their own and develop themselves into something later on in life. Czech Republic, Eastern Bloc, there was a true communist mentality that even though the wall came down long ago, still exists to this day in just a culture. So there's not only cultural gaps, but definitely from a work perspective, changes and sensitivities that I think everybody has to be aware of if they're going to go work overseas.
Outside of Bozeman, Montana, where in the world did you like living the best?
That's a great question. I've tried to answer that before. Everywhere. I'm an individual that loves experiences, and I think we live in a beautiful place. I have enjoyed living around the world because it has opened my eyes that we're all really the same. We're a lot of people. We have been raised in the U.S. to think we're number one at everything. We're really not. We're quite small. And people are the same way down deep. They just want to love. They want to exist. They want to get along. And so my experience have been so diverse, from Asia to Eastern Europe to Western Europe, the U.S., South America. I don't know if I could pick a place, Arnie. However, I will say that I did choose to come back here to Little Bozeman, Montana, to spend my remaining days. And I will tell you that this place is very special. So that might be a home thing. It might be a favorite thing. I'm not quite sure.
What advice do you have for new entrepreneurs who are listening to the show, that want to get involved in marketing, that hear about, branding and, financial trends and distributed ledger technologies? What kind of advice do you have for them as a mentor?
A couple of my mantras have always been set goals and do what you do well. Everyone has fortes that they really can grasp onto and say, I do this well or I do this well. If you fight that, sometimes you'll be unhappy. And so I would say grasp on and set those goals. Don't be afraid to say yes. A lot of people are afraid to say yes if they don't know something, but it's in the right direction for them. And I can't tell you how many times I've said yes to something and then had to go quickly learn how to do it. And it's opened up a world of opportunity. I would say educate, and always educate. I spend an hour every morning reading and looking at new news and what's going on in different market segments to keep up with the times. I think that as we grow older, it can be easy to stagnate. And so, set those goals. Don't be afraid to say yes, drive forward, and fail fast. And I have to be careful with fail fast, because there have been some jobs that I've taken that I've had to step out of that were not in the right direction. And so I say fail fast, but don't fail early either. Don't give up if it's hard. It's going to be difficult no matter what, and especially for entrepreneurs. There's always that upcycle where things are going great. You're going to have downtimes. Be willing to go through those downtimes and strategize to get through it, but don't be afraid to fail fast and change direction either. I think those would be the three made ones. And don't be afraid of change. Your life will take a lot of different directions, and there's a lot of different paths, but enjoy it. And that's my biggest piece of advice to any entrepreneur, is make sure you're enjoying every day.
So what does the future look like for you?
Well, I've got one child left in high school, and so I've got a couple more years to get her out, and following her around has been one of my main goals over the last year and the next 2 years. As far as work is concerned, I hope to continue to expand Zoot's presence, where it's going. I have delved into really trying to commit back to the state that I came from and that raised me. My family's still here. I love this area of the world, and I'm in the tech community. We have a tech company that I work with. And so I've really started to look across the state in that whole tech community, and I'm trying to help some other folks. There's some groups, Frontier Angels, there's some other, the Tech Alliance. Even the Montana Chamber of Commerce is starting to get more involved in the tech community. And I'm trying to get involved in that, and I'm hoping that we can bring that together as more investment is coming into the state, and that tech industries, a lot of smaller companies are starting up. We're getting a lot of movement from outside coming in to create a hub for that tech community, and I'm hoping to be involved in that over the next 10 years and help to spur the development of that, the education, and just help bringing everybody together, because right now it's a little bit disjointed. So I'd say those were some of my short and long-term goals.
Eric Hathaway, it's been a pleasure talking with you today, and we're glad you're back in Montana.
Thank you, Arnie. It's been a pleasure speaking with you as well.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austine in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests, contact information, and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do, when our guest will be Spencer Williams, founder of Westpaw Designs, the Bozeman-based manufacturer of safe, eco-friendly pet toys. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.